All right. Well, hey, we're back for the first of 2024, our Sales Book Club podcast. So with me, I have Daniel and Zach, and I am Ryan. The gang's all here again. So hopefully everybody had a good holiday. I know I did. And this week, we're talking about a great book, The Challenger Sale. And I'd be curious to hear your, well, let's first say why we chose this book. And we chose it because we've read through several of Anthony Iorino's, man, I can never say that name, his books, Jeb Blunt's. We've read, you know, Mike Weinberg. So we've had some great content so far. And then, you know, I think it was leading up to the Challenger Sale because it's a little more complex. But I wanted to pause for a moment and just hear you guys' thoughts first on what your initial thoughts on the book were, or your opinion.
Yeah, I'll go first. I think this might be probably the most well-known sales book that we probably have read. You know, you see in a different job postings and stuff, they directly, some directly reference like the Challenger sales model and really push for it. And so, and it's pretty widespread, and it takes, it's kind of takes what Neil Rackham wrote in Spin Selling back in the 80s. You know, it's 20 years, around 20 years after Spin Selling. And it just kind of takes that really scientific based approach of what's working and how to interact with your clients, which in a lot of ways, I think it's great. The research side of it, I think, is fantastic. There's a number of things that I disagree with within most of it's just probably phrasing and how some stuff is structured. But for the most part, you know, we'll call it the model. No, the model's fantastic and a lot in the right context. And so, you know, I've kind of have a couple of notes here, and I'd be curious to hear your guys, both of yours, is, you know, who should read it. And I've got, you know, in B2B settings where your product or your service, you know, is complex, right? Yeah. And I think that's where there's a really delineating mark there. And they use the word solutions a lot. And that's, you know, that's probably one of those areas where I'm like, man, solutions are very poorly defined. Now, my employer has solutions in our name of the company, for crying out loud. So I can't say too much, but I will say, like, who shouldn't read it? If you're not in B2B and you're not selling anything that kind of resembles what that vague structure of what a solution is, it's probably not great. It's probably just, it's too high level. Or another way to look at it is, are there a bunch of stakeholders involved? Because I actually like the follow-up book to Challenger's sale in the Challenger Customer. I like that book better than the Challenger sale.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Just because it does a really good job shaping who plays what roles in the whole buying process. But before that, we'll back up a little bit, and I want to kind of get your guys' thoughts.
Yeah, go ahead, Zach. You know, I work for Microsoft, and this is a program that we actually deploy internally. I mean, we obviously have our own take on certain aspects of the sales cycle, but the Challenger sale for us is a big portion of it. And for me personally, what I like about this book is I have been operating in a space for a long time now where you have a desired outcome with your services or products, but that same product can do any number of things for a customer, depending on how it's set up or how it's deployed. And so we very much have to lean in early in the conversation to listen and consult and to really build out what those use cases are, because again, you know, everybody's heard of Microsoft, you can just go and buy stuff, but the outcomes are vastly different. So I would agree with you, Daniel, that if you're in a role where maybe you're selling a point solution or it's a less complex product or good or service, maybe the book is not as relevant to you, but I will say this, that years ago, I worked for a company where our product suite was fairly limited, and it was pretty much the same use cases all the time for our customers. But I read this book because I thought, hey, how can I be more collaborative? How could I be more consultative to my customers? And so it did help me in that environment as well. So I would say that I would encourage people to read it if you're interested in bettering yourself, but will it be applicable in all roles? Absolutely not. I feel like this is definitely more advanced.
Yeah, I think you guys hit the nail on the head. You know, I think it's a great insight to have, but it doesn't fit everyone, like both of you have said. I agree 100%. You know, if it's a real complex sale, there's a bunch of stakeholders that are involved. It's definitely a good read for that. In general, I don't know how applicable it is for me in my role right now, but I did like the book, and I do think there are some snippets I'm going to take from it and try and implement it into my own process. But I could see someone like you, Ryan, that's got a service that could be super complex depending on what the end user, like the outcomes that your customers may want. I can only imagine how detailed and complex it can be with all the technology you have. So that's my take on who would be for. Again, you know, someone who's in B2B sales, it's pretty complex, and there's a lot of stakeholders that are involved when you sell.
Yeah. I think another key thing that helps, like, there's a lot of great things, like, oh, you could agree with a lot of things in the book, but I think a key element of actually deploying this, and they at least broach it in the book, over at least a chapter, is like the company also has to be set up as a challenger model, and that can really hold you back, because to really actually make the best use of this, you actually, you as a company, or you have to see what a successful sales process looks like and what good wins are, right? Because that's, if you're in a, like a startup, or and you're trying to figure out and gain traction, figure out what works, you know, where the real value is, it's going to be really difficult to deploy, because it really focuses on, you know, it's, you know, challenging. I don't like the term challenger in the whole book, but really it's, you have to have a modeled sales process and know and guide your prospects through that process. So that means you actually have to know what that route looks like. And if you don't know what that looks like, it makes it really difficult to structure it at all to be effective. But having said that, some of the key concepts, again, I think are fantastic uses when you're in those kind of roles with those kind of companies.
Yeah. You know, something I was thinking about too, as you said that, Daniel, is, so separately, I have a side business that we've talked about where I rent campers out to people for vacations, right? Fairly low level type of sales engagement. There's not a lot of complexity to it. I probably would not deploy the challenger sales methodology to that. However, I will say that one aspect of the challenger sale that I really like is, you know, he uses the word challenge, and, you know, maybe we could use from Anthony's books, you know, being a trusted advisor or a trusted consultant, you kind of have to know what you're talking about first, right? And so, like you said, Daniel, this is not for those when you're trying to figure out who your ideal customer profile is or what the right marketing strategy is. This is once you've had some traction in the market. And I'll say, even in my experience with my rental business, you know, when I started out, I basically knew nothing about it. A year in, I feel a lot more confident when I talk to people, and I feel like I can be a trusted advisor when I talk to people about things. And I think that this book is similar in that you need some reps as a salesperson, because this is for an actual professional. You can't be lazy with this book.
I think that boils down the whole book very, very simply.
Let's end it.
This is how a real true sales professional guides the client through the process. Really, it's not that they're challenging and being aggressive, and they try their best to to disrupt that premise of like what that term challenge means. I don't think they did a super great job at it. And really, I think I agree, Ryan. It's just comes down to professionalism.
Yeah. Zach, you're the professional. You're leading up the solar industry. What's your take?
Yeah, no. So I agree. And I wrote something down here that Daniel said, you know, the company has to be set up for it. I loved reading that part about how, you know, I'm a huge fan of sales and marketing have to be cohesive and work together. You know, it's not, hey, they have their department, you do your thing, sales, you go get sales. It's a joint effort, all rowing the boat the same direction is the thing I like to use. So I agree. I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit more. I took a lot of notes off that to talk about today. And then, Ryan, you talked about, you know, Anthony's book, Eat Their Lunch, which we did a podcast on. While I was reading this, I thought a lot of back to that book a lot. You know, when you said trusted advisor, I chuckled a little. I remember when we were reading that book, he said, what do you need to be a trusted advisor? You need trust and you need advice, right? So I got a lot of that reoccurring theme, I felt like, through reading this. And I do think it's a great methodology to use, because I do think it's different. As I was reading it and talking, and they were kind of talking about how we were in that era of, hey, go ask open-ended questions. You know, learn more about the customers, get them to talk and dig. And one of my notes here I have down somewhere, you know, they said sometimes the customer doesn't even know what they need. So asking those questions is like, well, you're not really going to get anywhere because they don't even know what they need. You may think you know, but if you just come in and take the challenger approach rather than, you know, asking them and trying to uncover it and just saying, hey, this is where the industry is going. Here's why you need to do this, and then really rationalize it, and then also get them involved emotionally, which Daniel and I talked a little bit about earlier today offline. And then, oh, by the way, here's the solution I have for that.
Yeah. And I guess that kind of brings me to a point. You know, one of the methodologies talked about in the book is, and I'm just going to read it off real quick. It's teach, tailor, take control, challenge, and then close. You know, I know that those words could be like take control and challenge can be, I don't know, considered divisive or something. But I think to your point, Zach, once you've been in seat for a while in whatever industry you're in, you start to learn. If you're a professional, you learn about the industry needs, you learn about trends, you learn about how others are being successful, and you share those insights with your customer or your prospect. And so I'm kind of curious, like, on the take control aspect, like, do you think most sales professionals do a good job of that, of really guiding those conversations? Or do you think, because I'll pause, and maybe this is my own experience, but I still feel like a lot of people are asking those leading open-ended questions, trying to uncover pain versus going to that next step, that higher level of value. I'm just kind of curious what you guys' take is on that.
I would say that a lot don't do a great job on that take control. And that, again, that part is a balance between experience and kind of leveling up your game as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it kind of toward the tail end of the book, it starts talking about, you know, how do you really start managing those other stakeholders? And it's like, it went back to that tailor portion that you just mentioned, was like, how do you tailor your message to the different people in the organ, you know, in a buying committee? Because it essentially, you know, most all of these complex sales are consensus type selling scenarios, and you have to learn to tailor. But that, what that means though, is you have to understand and have been at least have the experience of, okay, I know that this person needs this message.
Yeah.
Right. And this is how we have to differentiate. You have to almost start breaking down all of your different stakeholders and what's important to them, which starts to look honestly like a couple of other different sales models that are out there. You know, it's the same premise, and ultimately it just comes down to, it's like, okay, what's the best way to get this deal from where it's at to close? I know that these steps are going to be are needed. I know that this person's going to have an opinion at some point, and You know, some people have veto powers over deals, and you don't want them to be in the dark, right? Or you don't want their persona to be in the dark, and then all of a sudden at the end they have veto power and the deal is over. And so that's where it's like, is that professionalism, like, no, if you really want this deal to close, you need to go find a way to seek that person out and make sure that that doesn't happen, and really own the sales process through the close, instead of I own it to a certain extent to kind of keep playing in the game.
Extreme ownership,
where a lot of people do is they just sort of play in the game and go with that casual back and forth, which and I'll let you go, Zach, here in a second. But what's interesting is, like, it goes back to the beginning of the book in the different, you know, five profiles of sellers. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, it's really helpful to have an understanding of which one you naturally, like, fall toward, because then you can understand where your tendencies are lying and how they are holding you back.
Yeah, very, very well said. I think a lot of it comes down to just your experience in whatever industry you're in, because with that experience, you're going to know common, I'll say, pitfalls or red herrings that they may throw out for you, things like that. I think as you develop your skills and continue to work in your specific industry and continue to call on your target audience, you're going to get better at controlling the sale, just like you would with anything, right? You start walking, then you're walking a mile, and then two, and then, like we were talking about, now you can go run a marathon. But I think, Daniel, you talked about, you know, hey, each stakeholder that can hold it up and stuff, you know, I'm sure we've all heard WIFM, right? What's in it for me? So getting all those stakeholders mapped out and making sure you flesh out any objections or any deal breakers. I mean, there could be someone that you didn't get mapped out. They come into we'll call it the final meeting, and they veto it, like you said, and it's all that time and effort that you put in could just be done and over with just because you didn't do all the due diligence. And I'm sure that's going to happen a time or two. But again, it's that experience that you've got being in the industry and knowing, like, oh, hey, I don't want to do that again. Make sure we get so-and-so involved. You know, if you were selling something and you never even thought to call on, like, I don't know, marketing or something like that, just picking a random one and didn't get their opinion, and they're like, oh, we can't brand this because X, Y, and Z, then yeah, it's going to be an uphill battle to come back around and close that.
It is. You know, actually, I had a deal this week that we lost. We had a new executive come in, and it was just tough to build the value with them in a short enough time to, and this was around, you know, some renewals and things as well. But you're absolutely right that you can have that single stakeholder that basically they can derail the whole thing. Now, he is part of a buying committee, but he's at a high enough level that, you know, he has veto power. So I one thing that I always take away from this book and some of the other verses that we read is we have to act like professionals. I know sometimes in sales, hell, I've had, I'm cursing now, but I've had sales roles where it's kind of like the, like, laid back culture where you're just smiling, dialing, and you're closing deals, and that can be fun for a while. But as you advance in your career or you change what it is that you're selling, you got to be more prescriptive and more proactive. And that's this book all day, every day. You got to wake up with purpose versus just reacting, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well said. And, you know, to the point you made about that the new executive coming in, you know, they talked specifically in chapter 3 about, you know, it's a marathon to convert to the challenger sale. And I made a note that just says, you know, I heard somebody say that, you know, hey, the tortoise always wins, right? It's slow and steady, and it always wins the race no matter how many times you read the book. So, yeah, it's a process.
Yeah. Tell that to my boss. So
good luck.
That's why you gotta have pipeline coverage for deals like that.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean,
there's a couple of examples, but it's like if really understanding and knowing when if a deal goes, like, if it's off on the right track or it has, I did like their use of the term, like, momentum, because all good deals have some level of a momentum. Mm-hmm. And if you know, there's an example that they kind of run through of like, if a junior level person is reaching out to you and it doesn't seem like you're getting access, you know, throughout the rest of the organization, it's like, well, yeah, there's a good chance that you're probably a check bid or something. But it really is, you know, knowing that if I don't have those contacts and start setting up those differentiators, and I think they do a really great job in this book about, you know, teach for differentiation. That's part of that teach, tailor, and take control. Mm-hmm. Like the take control part, yeah, that's the professional of them, knowing that as we go through this type of sale, boom, 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 these different type of people are involved, or this is what they care about. But even before all that, the differentiation part, I feel all very strongly with is you have to differentiate early and often, and there's never too much differentiation that you can do, not just with your product, but also with how you sell and how you engage people. And I think mm-hmm. that's, you know, they dedicate basically two chapters to like teaching for differentiation. And I think it's really helpful, but that kind of also feeds back to the company and the culture that you have, because if your company's not set up for that differentiation, you know, you kind of end up being a lone wolf out there. And that's one of those personas that they seller personas that they identify as well. And I think it'd be good just to kind of run through it. We haven't done it yet, but I do like how they set up the five profiles. And I think they're very accurate. You have the hard worker, the challenger, relationship builder, reactive problem solver, and lone wolf. And I think when my notes here, I've got, like, you know, challenger kind of leads, that's the consultant, right? That's the, you know, consultant in the room. That's where you push people. That's where you bring insights. I do like there. And there's so many, this book is really funny when you look at a couple of Anthony Iannarino's books too, is like that there's a lot of similarities. I like the way Anthony packages it better, but, there's a lot of similarities of, like, you have to have, like you said, Zach, you have to have
trust and advice.
Trust and advice. Suddenly, yeah. had a brain fart there. I'm like, trust and advice. Yeah. If you don't have those, you're kind of off on the wrong foot to start with.
Hey, one question I have for both of you, you know, if we're being real, most salespeople, they're B, C, occasional D students, you know, and then you go into sales, right?
This guy right here.
Hell, I got my MBA, and I mean, I beat that way through it. I mean, I got a couple of A's, but, you know, like, it's, but how do we transition those salespeople who, you know, you enter because you it's the thrill of the hunt. You're excited about making money. You like talking to people. You're a relationship person. I've always been curious how we help people transition over into more of that trusted advisor and consultative approach. I know it's not going to be everybody. I mean, there's always going to be people that are doing one thing or another, but, like, do you think that this book is helpful for helping people transition into, like, upping their game? Or I'm curious if anybody has any other insight there as to how they've moved beyond that. 'Cause I know how I moved beyond that.
I think you need to know what you sort of enjoy doing, right? The types of problems that you like to solve first. I think, you know, the challenger model, and if in the wrong, like, you could, all things could be great, but if you're not passionate about what you do, it's hard to be consultative or have advice if it's just kind of canned. Right. There has to be some degree of passion about it. Otherwise, it's kind of robotic. And I think that authenticity side of sales is important. And I think sometimes it's a struggle for some salespeople, like myself as included, is, all right, what's the right environment, the right company, the right, call it industry, whatever it is, like, where do all these things sort of line up where that best scenario for success exists? And it's really tough to find. I don't think a sales model necessarily does that.
Yeah.
I think that goes back to, like I said, culture and fit.
That's a great point. And Zach, I'll be happy to hear you chime in too. But you raise a point that, you know, you could have two people working at the same company and have vastly different outcomes. And it really, to your point, you know, maybe person A is really not as invested or into the industry that they're in, or maybe there's a cultural disconnect, or maybe they're just cognitive dissonance, you know, with their sales cycle. And, you know, person B is experiencing something totally different. So that's a good point that you bring up, Daniel. I don't know, Zach, how did you get beyond the bro code and start becoming a professional?
Yeah, so I think a lot of it, you know, to answer your question, you know, can it up their game? I think it's a lot of it is, as long as there's cohesiveness between, you know, the rep and the company. You know, they talked a lot about, I really enjoyed reading, you know, chapter 8 specifically talked about how, like, the company needs to support this model, so to speak. So, you know, they have a note down. I have a note down here that if you don't get frontline sales managers on board, the initiative will fail. A couple other notes here. Reps don't always make great managers. You can't just excel at sales and be a great sales manager. You need to excel at sales management as well. So for me, it's like, I think it can up their game as long as there's cohesiveness between the company, the frontline manager, and the rep. And then, but really at the end of the day, I think the biggest thing is, you know, shout out to Jeb Blunt Jr. here. Him and I developed this, about golly, 2 years ago now.
He is your BFF.
Yeah. Right. We're like this, man. Now we talk on the reg.
Does he know? Does he know that you're his friend?
Yeah. Well, we'll tag him in this post and hopefully he'll say something. How about that? You know? But, you know, I think a lot of it comes down to your story, right? Like, what's your story? You know, and what that mean, what I mean by that is, what's your story no matter what company you go work for, right? Whether you, like me, rent cars, sell plastic, sell solar, sell blinds and shades. And I'll stop on that for a second. I think it was Daniel that said, you got to be passionate about what you do. You know, when I had that stint at the blind and shade company, I was thankful for a job, obviously, but you know, I just didn't get up in the morning and be like, man, let's go sell blinds and shades. I just personally wasn't passionate about it. And then, you know, wanted to get back into an industry that I thoroughly enjoyed, which is solar. You know, I love getting up every day to go learn more about, you know, really anything in solar, right? I mean, it's just so vast and up and coming. And I think it's going to continue to grow no matter what happens. It has
a bright future.
Yeah, I see what you did there. An array of things, right? but yeah, I think it can up the game. It's just you got to have the right pieces and you got to be – I don't care. You know, I use this example. If I didn't believe in what I was selling when I was selling shoes way back when at 16 years old at the Reebok store, if I didn't believe in that shoe, I wasn't going to sell it to a customer because I personally just didn't think it worked. So
I love it. I don't know how to close this. You know, I'm thinking through it because we've kind of veered into the.
I've got a question for you. I have a question for you guys. Assuming that you're not a challenger already, which of the other like seller profiles do you personally fall into?
You know, I definitely default into the relationship methodology, right? Where you're building those relationships and you're collaborating. I think that's just because I like having friends and talking to people. And so for me, if I'm being quite transparent, I have to actually focus myself into pushing towards challenger sale. It's not that it's too hard for me. It's just that it's not my default mode. You know, that's probably one of the reasons I'm on a podcast. I like chit-chatting with people. So, but what I found over time is they're not mutually exclusive. So that's what I found for me. I don't know, Zach, what's your take?
Yeah, I think I would fall in that too. I would say relationship with a little bit of the hard worker sprinkled in, not to say that I don't work hard. But for me, you know, back to what I was saying earlier to tie it back in, you know, when Jeb and I were talking, he's like, what's your story? And it took me a little while to understand it, but I was and come up with it and really analyze what it is. And for me, it's like, hey, I believe in helping people in everything that I do. I just happen to, you know, rent cars, sell plastic, and now in solar. And then when you develop that, you know, you think about other things you do in life as well. So like for me personally, being involved with like the church and doing stuff with them, it's like, no, that's who I am. That's what you're going to get. And so to translate that back to the relationship side, you know, when I'm going and calling on, I call on right now a lot of business owners themselves that are small business owners that install solar. And so it's like, hey, I want to get to know them. You know, I without mentioning any names, there's this company down in Kansas City that's like, hey, I know they got two kids right now. They're about 3 and 5. You know, I know when the guy's mom passed away, I sent him a card and said, hey, thinking about you today. You know, I can only imagine, you know, like that's me just naturally. And I think to your point, Ryan, of, you know, it's good to A, realize where you're at, but B, you know, one of the things I focus on then is, okay, you're that relationship guy by default, because that's just who you are. It's innate and it's in you, but work on, okay, relationships don't close, or you got to still close deals though.
Yeah.
Like you can build all this relationship, but at the end of the day, you know, your job is to advance a deal, close the deal, right? Those three things. Mike Weinberg has a 3-step. I can't think of it off the top of my
head. Create, advance, close.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Daniel coming in clutch. So yeah,
Daniel's that's like a challenger.
Hey, right back to you though, Daniel. Which out of the five, which one do you think you naturally are?
I know which one he's not.
Definitely not the hard worker. That is not me.
I wasn't thinking that.
I was thinking definitely not the lone wolf.
No, actually, I probably am a mixture, and it kind of changes day to day between lone wolf and then the problem solver, and that's it fades and comes back. Those are those two tendencies that I have to sort of fight, because the lone wolf side is definitely for me. It pops up just because like I end up generating some insights, right, that I think are valuable for the customer. And then it's like, I'm going to go down that rabbit hole and flush it all out and that can sometimes kind of like, oh, Daniel's off in his own little world trying to solve, like understand something. But then that's also sort of tied to like, I'm trying to understand it because there's a problem there that I want to solve. And so I like to solve problems. That's my problem. My worst like personal habit, my wife will agree, is like when something's wrong, it's like, you know, instead of like talking through it and just trying to like listen to my wife, I'm like immediately, I just, what do I need to do to solve it? Like solve it now. And that's, so I, those are the two areas I probably lean to. You know, if I wasn't a challenger, I think I'm a pretty good kind of challenger concept for the most part. But yeah, those are the ones, the tendencies I got to fight.
I do like being able to get paid to solve problems. So that is one aspect of sales I enjoy. So
it's fun. And what I do is so technical that, you know, it's not like there's a swath of people out there that really understand this. You know, there's, you know, a few thousand that understand some of the nitty gritty details of what I do on a daily basis, for, you know, compared to this, you know, some folks that are, you know, selling, I'll say like pharmaceuticals or something. It's like, well, it's just a lot more reps out there. There's just,
you gotta be more beautiful to be a pharma rep.
I don't like being in hospitals. So that whole market is lucrative and helpful as it is. Nah, that's bad juju for me.
You know, I actually, it's funny, years ago, I had a buddy that was a pharma rep, and I was interviewing. And so he took me around on his cycles, and we were going through hospitals and stuff. Literally, like 2 weeks later, I had an appointment at that same doctor's office, and they still thought I was a farm rep. And it is hilarious how doctors will treat you, even though you're their patient. Like once you're like in their circle, totally different conversation. They were very candid, dropping all kinds of language and just basically ridiculing me, because I was at it was a dermatology appointment. I had like a mole or something, you know, and they're like basically hazing me. I was like, wow, all right, so maybe I don't want to be in this industry.
Oh man,
I didn't get the job.
So. Yeah. probably for the best.
Yes. Yes. Well, any last thoughts? I know we're coming up on our time, but I think we've established this is definitely for your folks that are wanting to invest in their career, as well as, you know, if they're in a complex sales environment. Any other takeaways that you guys have on this?
Yeah, without running through just like a couple of the key points that people can read in here, I do kind of go back to, you know, what like the key premise of the book. And it's like, yeah, mm-hmm. that the, you know, teach, tailor, take control, I think is the, if you boil it down,
yeah.
it's that's the core of it. But kind of another way of sort of thinking about that, just to like, I think it might help get people's minds thinking in that direction of how to engage customers and prospects is like, you know, you really have to, you have to empathize and put yourself in your client's shoes and view their objectives, or what they're trying to do from their lens. And I think can be really difficult to do sometimes when you're trying, especially in those kind of roles where the volume is important. It's hard to empathize when you're just, you know, smiling and dialing and you know, that kind of goes back to who's this book really for. And I think it's, you know, very strategic, very strategic type sales and understanding, you know, there's a line here. I liked it. It's like, what's currently costing our customers more than they realize that only we can help them fix. And it's like, yeah, that's, I think it kind of simplifies it back down to, all right, what are we trying to do? We're trying to uncover things that they don't know that's going to hurt them. That, hey, I've got, you know, I've got the prescription here, but doing it in a subtle way that it's not, I don't know, deceptive.
Yeah, it's definitely that, not a slow sales cycle, but it's definitely that slower, longer sales cycle where this really lends itself well to. Zach?
Yeah, very well said. Yeah, no, very, very well said, Daniel. I think the whole book can be summed up, you know, at the end of chapter 5, when I read that, I highlighted it in the book because it just, I think it really does a great job. So I'll read it instead of paraphrase here, but it says the single best incremental opportunity to drive growth isn't the products or services you sell, but the quality of insight you deliver as part of the sale itself. So I think that in a nutshell wraps the whole book into one statement right there of, you know, what insight are you bringing to lead and then take control, right, to your solution that you have to offer.
Yeah.
Stop asking what keeps you up at night.
Oh my God. I hate that stuff.
Yeah, that doesn't help anybody.
Yeah, I've been there, done that, heard that, right? Got the participation trophy to show.
Yep.
I'm not going to disparage certain sales methodologies, but there's one that leads with that a lot. Upfront contract, you know, do we still have time, blah, blah. And I hated it.
And so you want to, did we decide on the next one?
Well, we know what you want, Zach. So
we can do whatever. I'm flexible.
We'll be back soon. We won't be as long between episodes.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yes. I'm happy to maybe we could talk offline and figure out that next one. But also I think we want to probably at some point discuss the impact of AI within sales. I think
absolutely
we would be reticent to not discuss that because apparently it's a big deal now.
Just a little.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Absolutely. Awesome.
Actually, none of us are here. We're not real. This is all AI. So
yep. My story, the stories that I have, AI could never replicate. So I'm okay there.
You're talking about that time at like Friday night and Beeham.
All right. End of this recording. Thanks, everybody.